Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning. And we go to our 102.5, The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Willie Donick. Willie D, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, fellas. Good to talk to you guys.
Good to have you with us, Willie. We've covered a lot of ground on the show so far today. Your thoughts on Jason Bateman? Joe was very impassioned in his speech in the last segment.
I'm a fan of Jason Bateman. He's kind of the same. He's one of those guys. He's sort of the same guy in every movie.
Yes, thank
and
you.
He's been in a million movies, but I like him. I like him. He's a likable guy. I'm thumbs up. And, I'm a big fan of Ozark. Would be my favorite stuff there.
And Alyssa Milano.
Alyssa Milano. That's a completely separate category. I would say not.
People of our age love Alyssa Milano.
Yes. She does have some upside, but that's not quite the same.
I got Willie flustered. Bring up Alyssa Milano.
Not quite the same. Oh, that's awesome. So Willie on the Preds front.
Well, what was the show with her and the other Shannon Doherty when they were like the witches or whatever?
Charmed. As the text line has told us 20 times, Charmed.
Charmed is people are fired up about that show. Oh
yeah,
man.
That show I feel like was on, like, every time, like, if I'm doing the afternoon show, and my show starts at 3 or 4 o'clock, and I don't know what would have been on before, I flip on my TV, that show was on at, like, 9 a.m. or 10 a.m. every day for 10 years.
Yeah, it still is.
It's still on.
It's on right now.
It's amazing. So, Willie, on the Preds front, obviously they've hired Andrew Burnett. They moved on from John Hines. I guess a couple of things. Number one, what do you make of the hiring of Andrew Burnett, and what do you make, I guess, big picture of just the changing of the guard that is now taking place with the Predators, with Trotz coming in as GM, Burnett coming in as head coach, and the approach that it looks like they're taking as they move forward here?
Well, you know, I said all along I was really hoping. I shouldn't say I was hoping. I felt like John Hines had done enough to deserve a shot to start next year. So I would have been totally fine if that's the direction that they went. But I think Barry Trotz saw the vision of how they want to play. They want to play a little faster. They want to play a little bit more offensive-minded. He wants to build that team accordingly. And I think he feels like Andrew Burnett has got a better chance to do that. The other thing that I think we would all agree on is I feel like Barry Trotz probably thinks that they have who they have with some of the veterans, and for them to be successful in the next couple of years or get the most out of what they do have, they've got to get more out of Matthew Shane, Philip Forsberg, maybe Ryan Johansson, although, as has been pointed out even by Barry Trotz, they have some other options, some intriguing options that are younger down the middle at center. And so maybe Andrew Burnett with a fresh start, different approach, might get more out of those guys. So those were some of my thoughts. I mean, I don't know Andrew Burnett very well, but I do go way back. You know, I was there and covering the team that first year when he was there, so I remember him well for sure. And he's certainly been a million places since then. And I think he's got a really intriguing background that is a little different than John Hines.
So actually, you know, I think I want to ask Willie the same question that we were asking each other last week. This will be interesting.
Sure.
So, all right, hypothetical, Willie. I know you love the hypotheticals. Next 5 years, Nashville Predators, whatever happens. Trotz, you know, builds an incredible team. It's an average team, whatever it is. Same team next 5 years. Just the information we have. We have a lot more on Hines than we do on Burnett. But your confidence level scale 1 to 10. Hines coaching that team for 5 years? Again, the exact same team, exact same personnel. Or Burnett coaching that team next 5 years?
You know, we had a really good talk on our show yesterday about, you know, the fact that it looks like, you know, if you listen to Elliot Friedman, the latest he said, and he doesn't claim to know everything, but the Rangers search looks like it's John Hines or Peter Laviolette. And on the surface, you're thinking, how in the world would you want John Hines over Peter Laviolette? Based on track record and accolades, you know, it's really no contest, right? But they definitely have two different approaches. Every coach probably has strengths and weaknesses. But what I concluded, you know, really when we were debating it back and forth is probably after 4 or 5 years of any one coach, it's hard to continue to have the same message and have it be fresh, right? I think that's just how a lot of pro sports work. As much as, you know, you respect the coach, and I'm always a defender of coaches for the most part. Any sport we're talking about, college or pro, I tend to defend the coach and give the coach a lot more benefits out than some people who are ready to pull the trigger a lot quicker than I am. But I do understand, if you look at history, once you've coached about 4, 5, 6 years, it starts getting harder and harder to sustain success unless you've got a loaded team. So all that to say, you know, maybe it was time for the fresh start. Barry Trotz, you know, it's probably inevitable. Even Barry Trotz, who coached 14 years, you know, he changed out. He got fired twice, basically, or left once and got fired once after he left the Predators. So he understands that there are cycles involved sometimes.
Willie, on the front of the goaltending part of this, because I thought, you know, Barry Trotz and Andrew Burnett had their press conference last week, and I thought they made some really interesting comments. And then Trotz went on Jared's show, and Jared asked him about the goaltenders and, you know, whether or not at some point a decision is going to have to come down on that front. And basically, you know, Trotz gave, you know, the general manager answer of, you know, you'll leave your options open and have to consider things. But one thing he did say was, you know, if somebody offers him the third overall pick this year, then that's something they'd have to think about with one of their goaltenders. And we threw this out there last week. You know, if somebody offered you the third overall pick for UC Saros, would you do it? And I said that I would. I said, because that means you probably identified a centerman that you think could be your franchise centerman of the future. And this is just me personally speaking. The Predators may have a different approach. But honestly, when Saros' contract comes up in a couple of years, I don't really have a lot of interest in paying a goalie $9.5 million a year, which is what I think they're going to have to pay him. So what do you make of that discussion and the idea of the goaltenders at some point, be that Saros or Askarov, one of them maybe having to be traded? And would you consider that if you're Barry Trotz, if you could move up really high in this year's draft?
Well, I was sitting there when Jared was doing that interview. It was an excellent interview. I had just had an interview with Andrew Burnett for the Predators website, and we played it on our show yesterday. So I thought that was a really good discussion. I've thought about this a lot, because I know this is probably going to be something we talk about for the next couple of years as they weigh this. As Askarov now just is officially finished his first pro season in North America, he looks like a really promising prospect. But to me, Robbie, specifically for the third pick in the draft, if I'm going to consider trading Saros at all, and I'm not leaning that way, because the cap is going to go up. I feel like UC Saros is an absolute certainty, premier guy in the prime of his career, and it's going to be for a long time. He also, we know, does all of the right things to prepare himself. He's got the makeup. He's got the work ethic. He has got a track record of being healthy. That's a guy that, to me, I'm willing to invest the next contract in, because I know that he's going to do everything he can to stay in that premier shape for as long as he can. So all that to say, would you trade, let's say, Justin Herbert for the third pick in the draft if you were the Chargers?
Probably not. No, but
– okay. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's a premier – UC Saros, to me, is a premier goalie. An elite goalie is the same thing as an elite quarterback.
I don't know
about
that.
Is it, though? Is it?
I mean, the Golden Knights are getting ready to win a Stanley Cup with Aiden Hill as their goalie.
Right. There's different ways to win a Stanley Cup. I mean, you can win the quarter, you can win the Super Bowl with Brad Johnson, but it certainly helps that you have a guy that tips the scales. UC Saros tips the scales. I saw, you know, some analytics people say he was worth about 16 points in the standings this last year.
Right.
And Barry Trotz said, I think, a number even higher than that. So we're talking about a guy that is worth that much, I think. So the third pick in the draft, right, in the NHL, I just pulled up a couple, and here's a name you guys will love to hear again. 2007 draft, the third pick in the draft was Kyle Turris.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Mm. The 2008 third pick in the draft was Zach Bogosian. So these, you know, I'm just, it's a little bit hit or miss. It's not a certainty that you're going to get a franchise player with the third pick in the draft, even though there's a lot of guys that are, right? We can go pick a year. You could find five guys who were third picks in the draft that were great players. I think, what was Duchesne? Was Duchesne a third or fourth pick in the draft?
Yeah, he was way up there. He was up there.
So all I'm saying is, if I'm going to trade Saros, I need certainty. I need guys who are already great players to get value back for Saros. I'm not trading him for future possibilities. Now, I would trade Askarov for the third pick in the draft, maybe. That would be something I would consider, for sure. But if I'm going to trade Saros, I need a haul of certain things. Plus, you know, you got to throw in a couple first-round picks, too. To me, he's that type of player. He's got that kind of value.
So you're not of the mind that they're going to have a long-term setup of Saros and Askarov together. Like, one of them is probably going to be turned into assets coming back.
I think that's possible. Barry Trotz did say in that interview with Jared that, you know, all of these things are possible, right? He'd consider everything depending on what comes his way. But Askarov, he looks like he's got an amazing – I tell people who don't know hockey that well, they're like, what about Askarov? So the way I look at it is like he's got he's that kid in single A right now that's got that upper 90s live fastball, the electric slider. He's got all the pieces, but just needs a little more refining, and that's just going to take some time. It takes goalies a little bit longer. So you could see that. Like, UC Saros became – Pecorine's backup when he was 21, and he was the backup for what, 4 years at least, and before he started to get more and more playing time. So that scenario could work, because Askarov is going to be inexpensive. But Joe, I think it will be tempting if you're still looking for that premier center that Barry Trotz has said specifically he's been looking for, right? Then Askarov could be the piece that could get you there, get you a better chance to get there.
Willie, last thing for you here. I mean, everybody, we've talked a lot about the offensive approach of Andrew Brunette, and Barry Trotz has talked about, you know, that's the way the league is going. You want to get more offensive. Now, as you know, I mean, they've got a lot of forwards that I think Predators fans should be excited about right now coming up through the pipeline. And I look at their draft picks. They've got 7 picks in the top 83. I would not be surprised if the first pick that they have this year at number 15 overall, and we'll see how the board plays out. You got to go by your board. I would not be surprised if they go defenseman with that pick, because I think there's still some room and for work in their pipeline with defensemen. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's kind of crazy to say this because for years it was the opposite. But I think if you look at their prospect pool and you list their 10 best prospects, way more of them are forwards than defensemen. I can't name a defenseman unless we feel like a guy like Spencer Stastny has moved up, and I think he probably has. But they just don't have that premier guy that looks like he's the next Ryan Ellis or Roman Josi. You go down the list of the great defensemen that they have developed. I don't know if they've got that guy. So, no, it wouldn't surprise me at all if they use a pick on a defenseman. Even though they covet that high-end forward. You heard Barry Trotz. He's like, I need guys that are going to get the fans rising up out of their seats. The other thing that I think you guys have probably tossed around, just like we have, is when you have that many picks, and this is another thing we should thank David Poile for, even though they were kind of going for it the last year or so, over the last 5 years, he never traded the first pick. So they've been compiling some pretty good prospects. If you look, they're top 10, top 12, depending on which site you're looking at, in prospect pools right now. So they have some guys on the way. So that to me gives you the option, if you want, of packaging picks to try to move up a little bit to try to get specifically a player that you want for the right price. So that's another thing to consider.
Yep, it's going to be really interesting. Willie, great discussion as always. Thanks so much for taking time to be with us, and we'll be listening starting at 11 o'clock.
All right, I'm just going to flip on a couple of episodes of Charmed here.
Yes.
Get ready for our show at 11.
Please do. Please do. Thank you very much.
All right.
Willie Donick, our guest here on Robbie and Rexha. We'll take your thoughts on the Preds. Lots to react to from Willie there. We'll get into all that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Join 102.5, 106.3, The Game tonight for the night before Charity Riders Round featuring Saving Abel, benefiting Souls for Souls. General admission is $20, with every ticket going to purchase a new pair of shoes for a child experiencing homelessness in Middle Tennessee. It's happening tonight at the brand new The Ballad East next to the Gallatin Hotel in East Nashville. Doors open at 6 o'clock. You can get your tickets now at thegamenashville.com/golf. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Presented by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty. Call TJ's team today to see why they are referred to so often. Streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook. Live from our 102.5 The Game studio. Brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Thanks to Willie Donick for being with us in the last segment. We'll have Mike Herndon from PaulKuharski.com coming up at 8:30. So looking forward to that. The goalie discussion to me, Joe, continues to be a really interesting one because I think you and I both agree that at some point, like if you're Barry Trotz, you're going to have to make a decision on one of them, be that Askarov to move him and get assets for him or Saros to move him. Willie made it pretty clear that he likes the Saros deal, obviously, and he wouldn't have a problem giving them the next contract. I wouldn't have a problem necessarily with the Predators giving UC Saros his next contract. Obviously, we know that he's good, and we know that he is an elite goalie, and that he is going to be worth $9.5 million somewhere. By the time his contract comes up, it could be more than that. It could be 10 by the next time that contract goes around. And the Predators could elect to go that route. But I guess my thought process on it is, if you feel like Askarov is that next guy and that he can give you elite-level goaltending or close to elite-level goaltending, would you be better off allocating some of that money elsewhere to build a team around the goalie at that point? That's the way I would probably try to do it. And because, look, Willie's right. There are different ways to win a Stanley Cup. You can point to different examples. You know, Tampa's won a couple of cups. They've got the best goalie in the world. Now, they also have a lot of good pieces around their goalie, but they got the best goalie in the world. I mean, the last two cup winners, and I'm already putting Vegas as a cup winner. I probably shouldn't do that. But let's say Vegas finishes this off. Aiden Hill is their goalie. He's a third-string goalie coming into the playoffs.
Playing great.
He's playing great.
Still. I mean, you're like goalie play
is important
for people who win.
Right. But I think we've seen that you don't have to have the elite of the elite guy to win a championship. I mean, the Avalanche won last year, and they had Darcy Kuemper. Darcy Kuemper is a good goalie. He's fine. And he played well in the playoffs last year. But I think everybody would realize that the reason they won last year was because they had Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar and those guys.
Yeah, that's why it's just an imperfect. I have many takes on Willie, including very disappointed that he would not rate his confidence scale on the coaches.
Yeah, he didn't
not
rate
surprised.
It.
Not surprised. Very disappointed. Also very pleased and proud that he also loves Alyssa Milano. But I we've talked about it before. It's just such an imperfect comparison, the goalie quarterback thing. Like he threw out Herbert. It's just, you know, it's like the quarterback is a combination of the goalie and the elite centerman kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It just doesn't totally work. But I do agree with Willie on one thing that I really agree with is, and we talked about this, just for the third pick for Saros, man, that feels light to me. And I want someone who I know what they are as a player. And, you know, but as far as who to trade and all that, that's where it gets really interesting.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, it's interesting because I hear you. Like, I would almost agree that just the number 3 overall pick back for Saros doesn't seem like enough. Now, I also think that if you think you're going to trade UC Saros straight up for like an Austin Matthews or somebody like that, like it's not going to happen. So,
right.
Like he's kind of in the middle ground of what exactly does the value there look like.
But we've talked about all those Maple Leafs guys. Like to me, I'll take any of them over the number 3 pick because I know what they are. And it's just, I feel like this draft, I mean, I guess any draft, you go through any pro sports draft and go up and down them and study them over years and you're going to see all kinds of misses at any spot, but I feel like this particular draft, it appears to be, we know who 1 is, we pretty much know who 2 is, and then there's a bunch of different opinions on 3 down, right?
Well yeah, but I mean there, I think back to the last time the Predators had a really high draft pick and there were 4 guys that we talked about. ad nauseum. And it was Seth Jones, Nathan MacKinnon, Alex Barkov, and Jonathan Drouin. And those were the four guys. And those are the four guys that went. Now, MacKinnon went one. It's worked out pretty well. Barkov went two. It's worked out pretty well. Seth Jones went at four to the Predators. And it's been good
for the most part. Good. Good player.
Drouin has not worked out. Like, he has not lived up to being the number three overall pick. So there's an example there of what you're talking about. Like, sometimes it's a little bit different. I mean, now, look, I can go back through different drafts, and you can find some pretty darn good players that were drafted number three overall.
Of course.
But to your point, there is not a certainty that comes along with it.
And also, like, if I'm trading Saros, that is the – I think I do like the Willie comparison of the – pitcher, you know, the 6'5 lefty with a 97 fastball and a vicious slider,
right?
Who's all over the place and wild and doesn't have command, but you're like, yeah, the stuff is elite. But if you're the Preds and you're gonna make this move, you gotta feel really good that Askarov isn't just a collection of skills and abilities, but is someone who is going to turn into a great player, consistent player. Some of Saros's consistency is like preparation, approach, how he lives off the, you know, all that stuff. Like, how do you feel about every aspect of the next guy if you're trading a great player in this position right now?
No, it's a great question. And look, the Predators, that's the thing. Like, they don't have to make that decision right now. Although I will say, like, I think UC Saros's, and this is just me, I think UC Saros's trade value will be the highest this summer. You got another couple of years left on the deal. He's getting paid, you know, just over $5 million a year. He's in the prime of his career. I mean, you'll never have higher trade value for him than he is right now, in my opinion. Now, that doesn't mean the trade value next summer wouldn't be high, because it would be. But it'll never be higher than it is right now.
And
you got to weigh that if you're Trotz.
Well, and look, if it's going to be fire wagon Preds hockey next year, then, you know, Saros' numbers could go down.
They could.
And so you take away the year of term, and you don't know exactly. You don't know for sure that he's going to be a Vezina level goalie next year. So yeah, this summer would be decent timing if you have the right return, which to me has to be more than the number three pick. Last word.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Mike Herndon from PaulKuharsky.com. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans as they open mandatory minicamp today. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Make sure you check out this week's Nashville's Best Deal. It's River Queen Voyages. River Queen Voyages is the most fun and unique way to see the downtown skyline from the water. You can get half off a $50 gift card while they last at thegamenashville.com/deals. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning. We are scheduled to be joined by Mike Herndon from PaulKuharsky.com here in just a few minutes. Matter of fact, I think he's just called in, so we'll be joined by him coming up here in just a second. But Titans mandatory minicamp underway today. They'll be on the field for at least the next 2 days, and then we'll see if they take like a fly fishing trip or a trip to Topgolf or whatever happens on the third day of minicamp. The third day is always interesting. Never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, and yeah, usually that means Vrabel's happy with the week of work that they did the first 2 days. So if they practice Thursday every year, I guess it means he's not.
He's upset. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Mike Herndon from PaulKuharsky.com. Mike, good morning. How are we doing?
Doing great. How are you guys?
We're awesome. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Mike, as we were talking about, mandatory minicamp underway today for the Titans. We've discussed the Kevin Byard situation. Did not show up to OTAs. We know about the Titans asking him to take a pay cut. Number one, I guess, do you expect Kevin Byard to be there today? And number two, does it put all this to rest in your mind if he is and he speaks?
Yeah, I think I would expect him to probably be there. I mean, it is mandatory. It would be pretty surprising to me if he held out of it. Obviously, there's non-rescindable fines involved as well if he doesn't show up, so it would hit his pocketbook as well. So I would assume that he'll be there, and maybe this staying away from OTAs was more of a show of unappreciation for the conversation that he and Rand Carthon had earlier this offseason. But yeah, I think if he shows up today, I think we can kind of all put this to bed and assume that at some point he will be on the field for the Titans, and he'll probably be showing up for first day of training camp, and no big drama as the season starts to unfold.
Mike, how different do you think this offense will be under Tim Kelly?
Man, that is a super interesting question. And, you know, the words of the players tend to make me think that it's going to be very different. I think, you know, we've heard some of that before and then seen more or less similar, you know, look offensively. But I do think that there's reason to believe, especially with the language change that's basically been confirmed at this point, you know, that they are moving to more of that Earhart Perkins style of terminology. I think you can expect it to be, you know, pretty different. Will there still be similar concepts as far as, you know, they're still going to run outside zone because, you know, they'd be silly not to with Derrick Henry, you know, in the lineup. But I think it's going to be different. I think you're going to see different concepts. Maybe you see, I think what everyone hopes to see would be a little bit more of a passing, more of what we would consider like a modern run-pass balance, right? You know, they technically have been pretty close to balance because they've been very close to 50-50 run-pass split over the last few years. But, you know, the modern NFL really is more of a 60-40 is balance in favor of pass. So I think you might see a little bit more throwing the ball around. I mean, the offensive line moves and everything like that seems to hint towards more of an emphasis on pass protection. So I think we'll see a little bit different looking Titans offense. And you know, that would be a welcome change after the last couple of years at least.
Mike, we've seen nothing to this point that would indicate interest from the Titans on DeAndre Hopkins and nothing from Hopkins that would indicate interest in the Titans. But would you be interested in DeAndre Hopkins if you were the Titans? And if this doesn't work out and he ends up somewhere else and the Titans just never really, you know, were interested at all, what do you make of the approach at wide receiver that we've seen this offseason?
Yeah, you know, I think the Titans should be interested in Hopkins because, I mean, at this point, you know, you kind of got your quarterback, you know, even if you were, you know, I never bought into the belief that the Titans were actually going to tank the season or anything like that. I thought that was always kind of silly, but you've got your theoretical quarterback, so there's no real incentive to not be the very best you can be out there in 2023. So I think they should go after Hopkins. He would make this offense a lot more interesting. He gives you really a credible pass-catching core when you consider Hopkins, Burks, Okonkwo, Phillips, you know, even guys like Chris Moore that I think are competent NFL wide receivers, if not, you know, exciting. But I think he kind of puts everyone in their place within this offense and really gives them a chance to, if the offensive line hits, be pretty decent offensively, actually. I think this could be a much better offense than, you know, what it could be as things stand today, just because there's just not that lack of a proven weapon that the defenses need to be concerned about outside of Derrick Henry. And, you know, if they don't go after him, I think it tells me that, you know, they want the young guys to take a step forward, and they're just kind of keeping their powder dry for 2024. It's kind of what, you know, how I would view that, because that tells me that they're just not willing to borrow money from 2024 to go pay for a veteran wide receiver to help, you know, this passing attack, help these young guys be able to come along without all the pressure being put on their shoulders to be the focal point of the passing game. It would kind of tell me that they're still continuing to view this as kind of a cap reset year. They're going to try to be as competitive as they can be with this current core and hope the young guys take steps forward and then kind of look to reassess the situation next year with, you know, $97 million of cap space.
Yeah, well, I think that's a fair way to look at it. I mean, I also just think specifically with Hopkins, they could just be out on him, right?
That's true.
Yeah, but you would think that at some point there would be somewhere along the way an interest in adding to this room. You mentioned the offensive line, Mike. What do you think about how it looks? I mean, I know we don't know how it looks, but just based on the information we have, you know, Dillard's and, you know, he's disappointing, but really good players ahead of him. Brunskill, loaded roster. Brewer moving to at least a better position for him, although I don't know for sure that he's going to be a good starting center. What's your confidence level that we're going to see a significant uptick here?
I would say my confidence level in a significant jump forward in the offensive line is pretty low because, I mean, you know, I think we all kind of, you know, have papered over a little bit or at least I think a lot of the fan base has papered over the fact that, you know, Ben Jones and Nate Davis, you know, even setting aside Taylor Lewan, who obviously was hurt for pretty much all of last year, Ben Jones and Nate Davis were unequivocally your two best starting offensive linemen, and you lost both of them. And you replaced them with, like you said, you know, you're moving Brewer to a new position. I would be highly surprised, even if he's more athletic and maybe you can do a few more things with him, I'd be highly surprised if he's better than Ben Jones, who was still playing well last year before the concussion started to, take him off the field. And then Nate Davis, I just would be very surprised if Brunskill is an upgrade over Nate Davis. Now, maybe he's about equivalent as a pass blocker, but I just think Nate Davis brought them something in the run game that it's going to be hard for Brunskill to duplicate. So I think if Dillard hits, I mean, to me, he's kind of the key. You've got to have your tackles, at least one of them, be good this year, because you can kind of help the other one. You can slide protection. I think they'll be okay. I think Skoronski's going to be okay, at least as a starter at, you know, left guard as a rookie. But you've got to have either Dillard or Nicholas Petitfrere be able to be trusted on an island. And to me, those two guys are kind of the key to this whole thing. If those guys, at least one of those guys has to be good enough in pass protection that you don't have to help them and you can slide protection to the other guy. And last year they had two bad tackles, right? And we saw what that looked like. You got to have at least one, and we'll see. You know, the jury's very much still out on both those guys. So that'll be one of the biggest questions that we'll be looking to see answers on first part of the season.
Mike Herndon with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. Mike, you know, obviously they missed Harold Landry last year. That goes without saying. And you would assume that by the time camp rolls around, just based on the timeline of the injury, that he'll be back and he'll be ready to go. But we see it with guys a lot coming off the ACL. Like, maybe they're available to play, but maybe they're not quite back to full strength of whoever player they were. So as you look at Harold Landry, what do you think are fair expectations for Harold Landry coming off the ACL injury?
To put it in like a number form, I would say a fair expectation would be, you know, 7 or 8 sacks, which isn't great. I mean, obviously he was coming off of a 12-sack season in 2021 when he had the ACL injury. So it would be a step back, but I think that's what you've got to expect. Like you said, I mean, we've seen it time and time again here recently. Bud Dupree, Taylor Lewan, you can go back to Jack Conklin. You look at Robert Woods last year. Guys coming off of the ACL, and even if they don't have the re-injury issues that, you know, obviously Lewan had, Conklin had some re-injury issues. Even if they don't have the re-injury stuff, the performance typically dips. I mean, we saw it with Robert Woods last year. He just never, ever looked explosive, even though he was available for all 17 games, right? So I think, you know, Harold Landry does a lot for this team when he's been on the field for them. And I think he'll still be able to do some of those things, but I would temper expectations as far as like a huge statistical season or huge performance from Landry. They're going to really need Arden Key to be a huge part of this pass rush. They're going to need D'Nico Autry and Jeffrey Simmons to be outstanding inside. And they're going to need Rashad Weaver and you know, maybe somebody else that maybe we don't even we don't know who that is right now to step up and really help this pass rush to kind of help Landry through this first season back from the ACL.
It's not a, quote, premium position, but inside linebacker, I'm really curious, you know, with Rice and Alshire, how they'll be. How important is that to you, Mike? I'm a huge David Long guy. I thought he was fantastic. I understand the issues. You know, he's got to be available. I think he's going to be really good in Miami if he is available. But what do you think that position goes? How important is it?
I think it is important because I do view it as, you know, while – it's kind of been marginalized, I think, value-wise to some degree. You still look at the guys that are really good, and they make a massive difference. You look at, like, Fred Warner in San Francisco. You look at Shaq Leonard in Indy when he was healthy, right? Those guys made massive differences when they're on the field because they seemingly are everywhere, and they're pluses in pass defense. And if you can own that middle of the field – is an offense being able to pass the football over the middle, that makes it just makes things infinitely more difficult on the defense, right? So I think the Titans being able to get better pass coverage, which David Long was a pretty good pass defender by the time he was done here. He didn't start out that way, but he really came along in coverage. Cunningham and all these guys that they paired with him have always been pretty bad minuses. So, maybe Monty Rice and Azeez Alshire can give them a little bit more balance as far as being able to defend the pass as well as the run. But, yeah, you're right. I think it's very important. And with the RPO game kind of growing each and every year in the NFL, that is another thing that it a lot of times is putting those linebackers in conflict and asking them to make decisions and almost be able to cover two guys at once. So I do think the inside linebacker position is maybe having a little bit of a resurgence in value if you look at how offenses try to attack defenses currently.
Well, Mike, really appreciate your perspective as always. Love you taking the time to join us, and we'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Mike Herndon from PaulKuharsky.com, our guest here on Robbie and Rexroy. We'll take your thoughts on that. We'll get into Tennessee in the Super Regional against Southern Miss. Lots to get into coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. 1025. Titans minicamp underway today. We'll see if Kevin Byard is there. I would agree with Herndon. If he is and he talks, he should probably put all that to rest at that point. It'll be business as usual. If he's not, it could get a little spicy.
Reasonable people will put things to rest.
Correct.
Well, the other one's on vacation, isn't he?
Oh, gosh. That's right. That's too bad.
He still stays plugged in, though.
Oh, he's been texting us throughout the show.
God, give it a rest, dude. By the way, I just changed the camera back because I took off the sweatshirt that cannot be on the internet. So
yes.
Everything's good.
That's good.
I think it's framed pretty well. Framed all right there, Michelle?
You look great.
It looks good.
I just want for your show, I want to make sure that you're framed well because this is your camera.
Thanks, Rex.
Yeah, got you.
Really looking forward to seeing what you take away from Titans minicamp today. It's going to be awesome. Mm. Follow Joe Rexroad, at Joe Rexroad on Twitter for updates. Any video allowed today?
So I'm sure there is.
Oh, yes.
Maybe I'll try to take some. But I have an old phone that keeps telling me my storage is full, so I don't know.
I'll get a video of Joe running to go get some Nick Westbrook Akine content.
Oh, yes.
Well, last time, Nick Westbrook Akine almost killed you out there, so.
Yeah, Joe saw me almost die. I was really getting a good video, and then I looked up, and I was like, oh, wow, a huge human is about to run me over.
That'd be a collision.
An elite athlete, too.
Yes.
Raymond and Franklin asks, which pronunciation is more awkward, the way Michelle says Titans or the way Jared says era? What's he say? Era or something?
How does Jared say era?
The correct way is era.
I don't know how Jared says
it. We all agree?
It.
I don't either. I'm sure he's listening. So
era?
Does he say era?
It's
yeah, he says era.
Okay. Jared says era? Okay. Weird.
That is weird.
Okay. What were we going to
talk
about?
What's your answer?
Titans.
Dude, I hate you. Also, it's not like it's not that bad. You're like, Titans. That's how you say it.
I just want to let the record show that Rex Road is the one that brings this up every time. I never.
Yeah, so you're mad whenever I do the bad audio for you. But hey,
but I mean, to be fair, people in the text line are constantly complaining about your Titans.
Well, they just need to
pound sand, as they say.
They need to be inclusive because we all know it is a problem. It's a New York thing, okay?
You're working on it. You're getting better.
That's right.
Hopefully.
Joe, do we have any news at this point as to where you're going to be spending your weekend? Tennessee advancing to the Super Regional. We are awaiting word as to whether or not the Super Regional will be in Knoxville or will be in Hattiesburg on the road for Tennessee going to Southern Miss. Either way, we know who they're playing. The path is in front of them. They're two wins away from the College World Series, but obviously it should benefit them to be at home if this is in Knoxville.
I've been texting some people who may be in the know, and these people are texting everyone that they can figure, try to text, and nobody's saying a peep. It's supposed to be announced in 10 minutes. So
all of course it is.
Yeah, exactly. As soon as we go off the air, it'll be announced. Look, I didn't realize until we had Mike Wilson on earlier that there's a thousand person difference in attendance because the official capacity is very close between the two, Tennessee and Southern Miss. But apparently Southern Miss can pack in 1,000 more people than Knoxville can. So maybe that makes a difference. It seems to me like you should go with team quality markers. And also, I mean, I've never been to Hattiesburg. I don't want to rip Hattiesburg. But I'm going to guess that Knoxville's a little bit better town for an event than Hattiesburg. I don't know.
I've never been to Hattiesburg.
I couldn't tell you.
I'm sure it's very nice.
Yeah, driven through on the way to New Orleans.
There you go. You're close to there, your favorite city.
I mean, honestly, if this happens, I will be eating in New Orleans at some point this weekend.
How much of a difference do you think it makes for Tennessee, Rome, or at home or on the road?
I think it makes quite a big difference. Not that they can't go down there and win, but that's a good team. They got a couple guys who are going to be big time prospects. They got a guy hitting home runs just all over the place, and you put him in his home stadium, you get the coach retiring. Yeah, and you think about Tennessee having lost at home last year, Notre Dame, the Super Regionals, but that was, okay, how much is Tennessee going to blow out Notre Dame on the way to Omaha? And then we'll see then the pressure be on. Then we'll see how they do. Because obviously they're going to Omaha. I mean, it was a formality.
Sure.
They get a home site for this weekend after winning the Clemson Regional the way they did. It will be a totally different approach and mindset, in my opinion, for them. And look, there's pressure now. You're the higher seeded team in the Super Regional. You're playing Southern Miss. You're expected to win, but it's not like it's nothing like last year. And I think that they've taken advantage finally of not having those expectations on them. And yeah, obviously they play well in their own park. I mean, Blake Burke hits a so-so fly ball in that place, and it's out.
It's out.
Yep. So yeah, I think it's a big, big deal.
Grigsby on the text line says Hattiesburg is similar to Mount Juliet or Hendersonville. Sign me up. Let's go to Hattiesburg.
Okay.
Big Hendersonville guy here.
I hear they have an awesome volleyball place. But I've been told you got to be careful. Careful what you say about that.
Scott on the text line says, I believe Brett Favre has some pull to get the Super in Hattiesburg.
Watch out, Scott. You're getting sued.
Might be the first pitch.
That'd be awesome.
Oh, man.
Let's get old number four out there. Sling it, Brett.
Oh, that would be absolutely incredible if they trotted him out there.
You could film the whole thing on your video. Hey, look, there's Brett Favre out there. He's throwing the first pitch.
Oh, look, there's a homeless person. He stole the baseball from him. Thanks a lot, Brett.
Looking forward to it. I think Wilson's going to be right. I think it's going to be Hattiesburg. It just screams Hattiesburg to me.
If that's the case, I'm not going to totally join the Vol Twitter bandwagon of what will happen today, which will be absolutely just...
Oh, they're going to be mad.
Oh, and the NCAA has it out for us and all this stuff. But I got to say, man, it will be hard for me to not think there's a little bit of Vitello backlash involved in that decision.
Is it just from, like, the team last year? Is that what it is? Or is it just his persona in general?
The last 2 years. I mean, look, they've changed some rules. I mean, look at
last
week. You got guys getting ejected left and right now, and suspended and all this stuff. And
Clemson had a player get kicked out, and I was right. Like, really?
I mean, it helped Tennessee. He's their best hitter, but
Vitello's chest bump last year.
There is that.
Sure, and he's fiery and all that stuff, but I think it's Drew Gill. It's those guys who were on the team last year, right? Those guys, and look, they were. I mean, you're throwing out the bird as you round first. I mean, come on. You know what I mean? Like, it's okay. And Gilbert F-bombing the ump. Like, they went too far a few times. Now, a lot of the stuff they did, though, I love. Like, the fur coat and the examining the bat, that's hilarious. But regardless, it all added up to these guys don't respect the game. This program doesn't respect the game. We need to do something about this. Some of that is tied to also we hate them because they win every game. But, you know, I do think that there's still but you know what? It needs to end. This team doesn't even have anything like that, really.
Don't we need to have – I mean, this is college baseball. I mean, don't we need to have a better system for, like, hey, let's figure out who's hosting the Super Regional on the fly than we've got right now?
I agree.
Like, it's kind of a joke.
It is, and it's really interesting because – and you read the rule, and it really is basically. The rule basically says, like, we're going to make our own decisions, and if there's a few more bucks here versus there, we'll go for the few more bucks. Yeah, that's really – like, that's what the rule leaves open to interpretation. It says revenue considerations. So, I know somebody down there who likes to throw a little $100 handshakes too, but I'm not naming any names.
Do you think that if they could find some hotel rooms down there, that Tennessee fans traveling is a consideration in all this? I would imagine you'll see more Vols fans going to Hattiesburg than you would see the other way around, would be my guess.
I think you're probably right. And, yeah, I mean, that's a fair point. They have a huge fan base that's excited right now. It looked like they showed up pretty well in Clemson last weekend. So,
of course, you know, everybody in the crowd's wearing orange. Neither one of the teams are, so who knows.
But like, when Tennessee did something, those people in that orange seemed to be excited. So, no, I mean, I think that's a fair point to bring up. Like, maybe they're like, you know what, we're going to get more people down here than the other way around. So
you're going to Hattiesburg is what we've determined here. We're going to find out here in about 5 minutes, maybe.
Yeah, as soon as
you look forward to Mississippi this weekend?
As soon as you go off there. No. I mean, no. No.
You don't know until you try.
I'm sure it's great.
I want to tailgate at the Grove. I don't want to go to, like, the Cracker Barrel in Hattiesburg.
What's wrong with that? I mean, what are we doing here? If Grigsby's right, and it's like Mount Juliet or Hendersonville, I mean, those are two great places. You'll have a great time this weekend.
And you can go get food in New Orleans.
I think I've actually gone to... I've gone to chain restaurants in both of those towns. So,
what's the difference?
Yeah, there you go.
Check it out. We'll see what happens on that front. That does it for us today. We'll be back a four-hour edition of Robbie and Rextro tomorrow. So make sure you're tuned in for that. Chase and Michelle up next. This is 102.5, 106.3, The Game.